Welcome to the Sports Ethicist Podcast. The Sports Ethics Podcast discusses the many ethical and philosophical issues that arise in and around sport. I am Sean Klein, the Sports Ethicist. You can read the Sports Ethicist blog at sportsethicist.com, where you can also download podcasts of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, or find links to related information. The Sports Ethicist is also on Facebook and on Twitter at Sports Ethicist. And you can email the show at sportsethicist@gmail.com. And today is October 9th, and baseball playoffs are in full swing with both American and National League Championship Series opening up this weekend. For baseball fans like myself and my guest, this is one of the most exciting parts of the baseball season. But are we getting it wrong? Is there something wrong with playoffs, and are there better ways of determining champions and organizing sport competitions? To discuss these questions and related issues with me today is Aaron Harper. Dr. Harper earned his PhD from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign and is now an assistant professor of philosophy at West Liberty University in West Virginia. So welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thanks for having me, Sean. I'll just say, as a Royals fan, this is the first time I've had this kind of interest in the playoffs in a long time. So it's weird to look at it as a fan as well as a philosopher.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting to see Kansas City and even the Orioles. As a Red Sox fan, I'm not that excited to see the Orioles in this far along in the playoffs. But I think it's good for the American League to have some of this, and it's fun to see. At least in the American League, two teams that haven't been there in a long time fighting it out, where over on the other side, you have the same two teams that have been there for 4 years, 5 years going now. But that has its own exciting narrative as well.
Unless, of course, we shouldn't be having playoffs at all.
Right. Well, that's part of the point here, right?
Yes.
And so our discussion is going to be somewhat focused around your working paper, which is called You're the Best Around, Reconsidering Athletic Excellence in Seasons and Playoffs. And you'll be presenting this at the International Association for the Philosophy of Sport meeting at the Central American Philosophical Association meeting this February. And so, you know, the paper is still in process and working, so we won't be able to put up a link to it, although eventually once the paper is presented, we can have something like that.
Yeah.
But for now, you know, I think it will probably surprise many sports fans to hear the claim that playoffs are not good ways to determine champions or athletic supremacy. I think that at least in America or the US, that seems like almost self-evident that these would be the ways to determine champions or athletic supremacy. So I think a good place to start would be with taking a look at the arguments against playoff systems. So maybe you could speak to some of these arguments.
Sure. Well, I think you might sum up the arguments against playoffs in a couple of senses. There seems to be a fairness kind of argument and an argument we might call an integrity argument. The probably the first and the main essay written on this is by a philosopher named Nicholas Dixon, and his concern has to do with basically, are playoffs actually finding the best team or the superior team? So he points out a number of ways in which you might think any particular athletic contest comes to a result where the best team doesn't win. You might have refereeing errors, you might have forms of cheating or gamesmanship. The best team might have an off day, or above all, you might just have a matter of luck.
Mm-hmm.
And it would seem in a playoff or tournament where one game or a small number of games is the deciding factor, luck or other sorts of things are more likely to influence the outcome.
And things like weather might could come into, particularly in outdoor sports, could come into effect.
Absolutely. So there are all sorts of strange things where you might think we want the best possible conditions to determine which is the best team. So a playoff seems less likely to get there. And there's also a worry about the psychological conditions that the event is taking place in. If it's a winner-take-all game, are you in fact measuring which team or which players better hold up under pressure, as opposed to which players or team actually just performs the best on the field? We might be measuring the wrong thing with playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
A second sort of argument from Cesar Torres and Peter Hegger seems to be more interested in what is a sport about? What is a sport, and how do we measure the excellence of a sport? And you might think that, or I think there are good reasons to think that a playoff isn't capturing that which is essential to a sport. I think this might be most evident in something like a shootout to determine your champion. Right? You've been playing, you know, an entire season or any number of games, and then your champion is determined by some particular skill or aspect of the sport, right? So there's a worry that the playoff, by focusing on some narrow aspect of a sport, is missing what's really at stake.
Right.
Now, so it sounds like, you know, you have some general sympathy for these claims. And to a degree, I do too, although I don't think to the same degree that you do. Another maybe criticism or concern about playoffs that comes up, which isn't really directly addressed, I think, by Dixon or Torres or Hager, is the devaluation of the regular season. This maybe is more the conventional or colloquial or layperson type of argument that the play, you know, and you see this, I think, most in particularly basketball and hockey, which have very long seasons and then a long playoff as well. And people look at the regular season with much less interest than they do the playoff season, let's say, the second season. And so there's this concern about devaluing the regular season. And this came up also, I think, within college sports, with the introduction of playoff in college football, and how little people pay attention to college basketball until their playoff tournament as well, too.
I saw a number of articles regarding that last week after the baseball wild card playoff. Why play 162 games if, in fact, it all boils down to one wild card playoff?
I think there are some ways to respond to those claims as well. So, for example, it's not that it just comes down to one game after 162 games, right? Because you have to play those 162 games in order to be in the position to play that one game. And I think it also ties into one of the things that you were talking about in terms of the hybrid system of balancing the regular season with the playoff system. And so it's getting maybe a little bit ahead of ourselves. But I thought that was an interesting way to think about it in terms of part of the reason why we have the way the one playoff game, one play-in game, whatever you want to call it, from the wild card, is to give a much more distinct advantage to the division winners, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that provides some balance between the importance of the 162 games and of winning your division, and so that not that the wild card team is being punished, but we're giving the division winners a little bit of an advantage there because of the 162 games that they've played. And so it isn't, and same way to a degree with the shootout. You only get into the shootout if you've played to a standstill after, more than 90 minutes, usually 100 to 120 minutes of playing soccer in the case of soccer. And so it comes down to, you've played to a standstill. So it's not that you're just going out and deciding the match on just baldly deciding it on a coin flip, so to speak. I mean, you have to get to a certain point where all other things have been tried. And so this is a way to one last thing. So like a tiebreaker for the regular season as well, right? Because you can imagine even in a season long tournament championship system, you would have a situation where two teams at the end are tied in their points or their win totals or whatever. And you'd need some way to differentiate the winners. And some might choose to have a game playoff, which would bring in all the concerns that one might have about the playoff system again, or you'd have to have some other tiebreaker that would be separate from playing the game. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you might think that those are really just a function of logistics rather than anything else. That if you could, you know, we would play 150 minutes in soccer, but everybody would be exhausted. So if our options are play with exhausted players who are barely able to move up and down the field, or bring in all subs and play with backups, or have a shootout, you know, none of those is ideal.
Yeah,
I suppose the opponents of the playoff might say, these are somehow insufficient because it's not the whole of the activity. It's only part of the activity. It's no longer the whole thing that we started with, something like that.
Yeah, no, and I think that there's a point to that, and there you know, you sometimes in the debate about intentional fouls, this comes up as well, right? In terms of giving precedence to certain kinds of skills, such as you know, a penalty kicking or foul shooting, or free throw shooting, and those kinds of skills, which are stripped down versions of the skills that you normally use in the context of the game. And so concerns of critics of intentional fouls like Frawley and others tend to view those as diminishment of the game skills. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the responses to that is the idea that that these are you in some way have already played to a sort of equal basis in terms of ties or whatever, or just a closely matched contest. And so those sort of restorative skills or secondary skills can be the deciding factor when things are already close. And so when you have a tie game, a tie match after 120 minutes, you know, things are pretty close, and it looks like you need some other way to figure things out. So it's not merely just logistics. It is a sort of decision about, okay, what's the next step we take when the constitutive skills aren't getting the job done, in the sense of, that makes them sound in some way diminished, but that the constitutive skill matchup between the two teams is such that they're not going to be the deciding factor. We need something else to decide it. And so something like a shootout or some other diminishment or other set of skills, maybe you reduce the number of players or you put in the subs, as you said. There's different ways you can imagine doing it. And, you know, raises issues of player safety as well, too. I mean, you have a bunch of exhausted players running around. They're more likely to get injured, I would think, as well. But I wanted to come back to the idea that that there might be some responses to these concerns that Dixon and Torres and others have raised, and that was some of what you focus on in your paper. So what are some ways in which we might respond to these fairness and integrity arguments?
Well, I mean, to some extent, I think the basic idea is right, that in theory, the more games you play, the more outcomes you go through, it's more likely to avoid some of these problems. But I think the real question is, what are we trying to do in the first place? Right? And I don't think there's any clear agreement as to what we're trying to do in a playoff or regular season or tournament championship system. But it seems to be something like, you know, generally, I think people agree with something like measuring and comparing athletic excellence. Right? Mm-hmm. Let's look at these forms of excellence, compare them, try to figure out who is superior. And I think the assumption in this debate is, well, there must be one system that finds the superior team, right? There's a best team, and we're going to develop a system that will pick out the best team. And the argument is, playoffs don't do as good of a job as picking out the best team as a season-long something, some kind of season-long tournament. So that's actually where I think the trouble is.
Okay.
Maybe there's not necessarily one single system for doing so. So I think there's actually a lot of different reasons. I don't know exactly which direction we want to go or where we want to go into. But I think we should realize that, in fact, different ways of looking at champions, a season, a playoff, a tournament, you know, one game, what have you, we have to acknowledge that they're going to give us different winners, and that's not necessarily a problem.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a great point, and I do think that that's a drawback to some of the discussions is that there is, you know, as you put it, just sort of this assumption that there's, you know, one standard of excellence, that there's one best team or one way to conceive of what it is to be the best team. And, you know, it just doesn't seem like there really is a homogeneous way to talk about that, that there are a lot of ways to think about the best team, right? Is the best team the one that is, you know, from post to post, the best team, right? The one that starts off the season strong and finishes it strong, or what do we think about the team that starts soft or weak or in some disarray, pulls it together, responds to the challenges in the course of the season, builds, gets, you know, develops towards the end and is able to win those games towards the end of the season, and either make it into the playoffs or, if it's a season long tournament, be able to accumulate enough points or wins at the end to overtake the other teams. That there's some virtue in doing that as well, that is worth taking a look at. Is that some of what you're thinking about as well?
Right. That, yeah, I think you've just described two competing definitions of what it would be for a team to reveal or display athletic excellence, right? The team that is from day one, I don't want to say from day one superior, but consistent throughout the season. Not even necessarily spectacular, but over the course of a season, for whatever various reasons, and the reasons might be relevant, we can go into those, a team has had success from beginning to end, as opposed to a team that, as you said, starts out in disarray, maybe acquires new players along the way, maybe they have a new coach and they're implementing a new system. And this team, you know, starts out not at the top, but by the end of the year is playing just as well, if not better, than the other teams.
Right.
It seems like a season and a playoff is going to, they'll each give you a different answer as to which one of those is the best team. But I don't think there's any obvious way to pick one or the other, right? I think we're mistaken if we pick the first one, let's say. Say, well, the consistent team is the superior team.
Yeah.
I don't think that's right.
Not right in the sense of, in a singular sense of best, right? Because there is something worthwhile. There's something excellent about being consistently good over that period. There's also something equally excellent about recognizing your flaws and fixing them in the course of the campaign, through the season, and getting better and improving, and even in the context of a game itself, right? You think of coming out in the first quarter of a football game, falling flat, getting behind, and then figuring out a way to make the adjustments in the course of the game to come back and win it. Right. And even have, you know, a massive comeback in the fourth quarter where you score, 21, 25 points or something. Well, could you score 25 points in the fourth quarter to come back? And, you know, the other team might say, well, we're the better team here. We played, more consistently throughout the game from the get-go. We played three quarters of football more superior to you. You just played one quarter. Shouldn't we get credit for that? You know, well, there's something for that too, but there is something also to be said about the team that makes the comeback, and so I think your point about having these different systems to be able to measure the different ways we might think about excellences in the game, I think is one that's really worthwhile, that I think the critics do seem to miss.
Yeah, the way I would put it is that these two, and we've just sketched two, right? A consistent versus sort of peaking later. I imagine you could develop some other competing accounts of what athletic excellence would be. But I would say they're both legitimate or defensible or something like that. That they both count as ways to display excellence. And I can't think, or I don't think there would be a good way to preference one or the other. I don't think we would be right in picking one. But I think to defend one championship system, say a regular season, as the best one, forces you to do that. It's making a commitment that one way of attaining this excellence is better, and that strikes me as problematic at the very least, or at least too narrow. It's too narrowly defining what we're looking for.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right. It becomes too narrow as you said, of a way to define it by really preferencing one conception of excellence over another. I mean, we were talking before recording about, the English Premier League a little bit and how we're both starting to get, as you know, we're just Americans, so it takes us a while to get into soccer and football, as they say. And but you know, it is interesting to have the champion of the Premier League decided just by the regular season. That's a whole regular season. They don't have a playoff system, and it is interesting, and it does change the way you think about the nature of the beast, so to speak. And each game in the course of the season, you do look at it differently than you do in a system that has a playoff system. And I think it has its pros and cons. I mean, obviously, like you were talking about in the context of Dixon's article, an argument that, through the course of a regular season, particularly a season like the EPL, which is what I think 38 weeks long, a lot of fluky things or luck things are going to wash out or even out over time, right? And you see that through the baseball season, you see that through hockey and basketball as well, and even to an extent through some of the series that they play in the playoffs, that the, you know, as opposed to just one game playoffs or one game elimination playoffs, that where, you know, with the, or even just in football, where 16 games, one or two games that might be decided on fluky things, either some bad refereeing or bad weather, can really make the difference in a team making the playoffs or not. So it really heightens the variability of teams. Whereas in a season long tournament for the champion, those fluky things wash out, and so you do tend to get teams with more consistent superior play are the ones who tend to be at the top, and the ones that are more inconsistent in the middle, and the ones who are consistent but consistently bad are going to be near the bottom, right? Right. Now, let me put this to you and see what you think, because what strikes me as one thing that is both, it sounds like that this is might be a pro, but at the same time can be a con too, and that's that the playoff system, or the one that allows for more flukiness, does bring the opportunity for teams that might not be in the mix otherwise to be in the mix, and either to get into the playoffs or just to be able to be near the top, so to speak, because of the flukiness. So I mean, and so you get more turnover in a sport like the NFL year to year of the teams that are at the top and teams that are at the bottom, irrespective of even, you know, talking about the playoffs, but just the division winners and so on, that you get much more variability in some ways because of the flukiness of football, because of the short season. And so that in some ways brings more teams into the mix. Whereas EPL, I mean, you have maybe six or seven teams that are the perennial top dogs, you know, your Liverpools, your Chelsea's, and your Manchester, so on. And you don't really get a lot of other teams that are in the mix come, you know, towards the end of the Premier League season. Like, so the Burnleys and other teams they're not really in consideration. You know, they're just kind of there as fodder for the top teams. Do you see where I'm getting at?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what that forces us to do is ask what perspective we're supposed to be analyzing this from, right? So mm-hmm. far, we've sort of put on our philosophy hats and tried to figure out, you know, what is sport about, and how can we figure out, you know, what the superior or most excellent team is, you know, in this sport, and however we're going to measure it. But the question here is, you know, it seems to be something like, well, isn't it good to bring in new teams, new players, new fan bases, something like that? And, you know, there's always a worry, well, by bringing in, you know, ultimately in the background, new money, if we're, you know, doing this for reasons of monetary gain, are we somehow, once again, as you said earlier, diminishing something about the sport for some unnecessary sort of gain.
Right. And that, you know, you get that argument from Bill Morgan and I think to a degree, Torres and Hager. And my question against that argument is what is being diminished? Like, what is lessened? What aspect of the defining elements of sport or the internal values of sport or whatever you want to call it, where is the diminishment? That's why I always have trouble seeing that. Now, I think Dixon has a little bit of a response to that, although I have a response to that. But so where do you see there, either in your sympathy in their arguments or in their arguments, where is the diminishment when we bring in these so-called external values of entertainment or financial considerations?
Right. Well, I mean, I think from what you've said, I think I might share your skepticism here. I'm not really sure how much we should be worried about this, but I guess the idea would be something like if we're supposed to be measuring just what's best at some particular activity by embracing a system that allows for flukiness over, say, quality, we end up. Your comparison was the NFL, where, you know, due to a short season and scheduling quirks and things like that, you often get more turnover or more teams that, you know, maybe you think aren't as talented that end up in the playoffs for various reasons.
Yeah.
You might think, well, you know, isn't the point here that our Super Bowl or our championship games should have the highest quality teams? Whereas maybe we get excited over a less quality team, but we're somehow losing out on something, that we're missing what could have been the pinnacle of athletic excellence. And instead we're getting something, I don't want to say watered down, but we're getting something a notch below that.
Okay. Yeah. So, like, I mean, you often will see that sometimes, like, the championship games, like either the AFC, the NFC, are better games than the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl itself historically isn't the best game of the season, right, even though, you know, by some lights it's supposed to be the matchup of the two best teams, and it usually isn't, right? Because it often can be that the two best teams are in the same conference, and so they're going to play each other in the conference championship, not in the Super Bowl. And so, like you said, that's a bit of a quirk of the way it's set up, rather than you know, just setting it up so that the two best teams play each other. Go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, one response to that is I think the regular season actually ends up with the same problem, in that, and football, either of the footballs we've been talking about, may not be the best example because they're very much one game playoffs. But if we look at a sport, let's take baseball, since it's baseball season,
right,
where we have a playoff series, right? I think in that sense, there's actually, I would argue, good reason to think that the series games are going to be of higher quality than either the one-game playoff we were just talking about, or the regular season, where we get, as you noted earlier, all forms of variability, you know, strange weather incidences, right? Injuries, teams that have just come off a long road trip and aren't really full strength or something like that.
Right.
And you're playing new teams all the time. Depending on how your season is organized, it may be a round robin, or you may have a division, but you're playing teams only a limited number of times. Whereas in a playoff series, you might be playing the same team 5, 6, 7 games in a row.
Right.
So we get to see something of the chess match between the two teams, right? You know, team A comes out with some new strategy. Team B has to respond to the strategy, and we see this move counter move sort of thing throughout the series.
Right. You know, so whether or not to bring a pitcher back on short rest, and how you're going to counter against that, and whether that's going to work or be a detriment. You know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think there's reason to think, in that sense, certain kinds of playoffs might actually, instead of having flukiness, they might actually give us a higher quality. I think it goes along with what we talked about earlier. Consistency is certainly desirable, but being able to peak at the right time arguably gives us a higher quality or performance in some way.
Right.
You might think that actually is, is showing more integrity to what the sport is about,
right?
Even if it's there in an odd way.
Yeah, and I think that the idea of sort of peaking at the right time, you know, some people look at that as, well, okay, the team just got hot and they're not real. Like, so take something that still causes me great pain as a Patriot fan, the 2007 Super Bowl, where I think an inferior Giants team got hot in the playoffs and beat the Patriots and deprived them of a perfect season, right?
Right.
And now they had a perfect regular season, but not, but they lost the last game in the Super Bowl, and it still causes me great pain and consternation. But you know, there's some concern. Oh well, you know, if you play that game 10 times, you know, the Patriots will probably win. Although actually, I don't know if that's actually true, because I mean, in one sense, the Patriots might have been a better team than and this gets to your one of your concerns about what do we mean by best team, because there's different ways to measure that. You know, in that the Giants were able to match up against the Patriots in a way that, even though the Patriots probably were a better team in the sense that they could probably beat more other NFL teams than the Giants could beat the Patriots because of the way their defense was constituted. And so there is that chess match thing that you're talking about. And,
right. And if that game had happened, I mean, week four, let's say, perhaps the Giants would not have been as prepared to take on this Patriots team. And in this case, right, actually, perhaps having 2 weeks to prepare and having seen 18 previous Patriots games, they were able to, you know, to play their matchups in a, right, in a way better than the Patriots did for whatever reason.
Yeah, and that's a part of, I think, a legitimate test that's going on in these athletic contests or in these seasons or in the leagues, and why you set up the leagues and you just don't have these one-off games is in part because you're not just testing one thing or just one aspect of athletic ability and excellences, but it's this whole broad package, which includes you know, the execution on the field, but also preparation and intelligence gathering and conceiving of novel and new ways to implement your knowledge about the game, all of which can take on different forms in different structures. And that's one of the things that really I like about where you're going in terms of having, you know, more options here in terms of, yeah, regular season is valuable. Playoffs and different structures of playoffs can call out these different ways of and different parts of the overall athletic excellence that we're trying to measure and compare. I wanted also to come back to one of the things that Dixon hits on quite a bit, and this is the idea of the fetishizing of psychological toughness.
Mm-hmm.
So, could you now, you briefly touched on that in the intro. I was wondering if you come back to that, explain a little bit more about what his argument is about the role of physical toughness here.
Well, again, if we assume that one thing we're trying to do in these various championship systems is identify the superior team, we usually mean that in terms of something like which team displays the most athletic excellence, which I gather means something like which team is actually best at playing this sport.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're deciding championships by a one-game playoff or even a short playoff series, it might be the case that certain players are, in some sense, more talented than others, but they don't stand up to, whether it's the criticism or the media or just the fans or the various forms of pressure that are put on them.
Right.
So it might be the case that teams that have success in the playoffs or in a tournament are, in fact, either they're winning because they have some more desirable psychological constitution, or we might just appeal to experience, right? Maybe teams that have been there before.
Right.
We often say this, I don't know if it's true, but we often say that teams with experience are going to be more successful in in some sort of playoff setting because they know how to deal with the pressure.
Right.
So the worry would be, are we, in fact, in playoffs, are we putting too much emphasis on who's able to perform well under pressure, who has whatever psychological toughness, you know, is defined as opposed to actually who's more talented?
Right. That's interesting. The question of the sort of experience factor and is that real or not? Because yeah, that is a common thing that we talk about. The veterans, the experience, they've been there before. They can, pass that on to the rookies and not let it affect them and so on. But I wonder, yeah, like that's an empirical question of how true is that? And I'm sure you can look back and try to test that. There could be some confirmation bias there.
I'm sure somebody tried to research this, just like, yeah, you know, all this research on whether people perform well in clutch situations, which,
right,
as I understand it, most evidence suggests no, but there might be some limited evidence that there is,
yeah,
you know, clutch hitting ability or something like that.
Yeah, generally the people who are clutch are people who are just good. They're good in the third inning just as much as they're good in the seventh inning.
Right, but the argument against this or in favor of the season would be, you know, if you're playing a large number of regular season games, each regular season game counts the same, right? So if this, yeah, is baseball and you're playing 162 games, no game is really that significant. So any particular game is played at a much lower level of pressure.
Do you think that now that is part of the regular season argument? Do you think that's true though?
I think it can't be true because inevitably we end up putting more weight on teams at the end of the season,
right?
I mean, in this run up to the wild card, you know, every team in the wild card hunt is playing a playoff game for essentially September.
Right.
I guess you could argue, well, if they had played well over the first 5 months, they wouldn't be in this situation. But just because something counts the same in the standings, I don't think that actually means they count the same as far as how we feel about them.
Right. Yeah. The psychological pressure. I mean, it seems, and the toughness that one's going to need in those situations, I think it is definitely going to be matches, games within the regular season that are going to have more of that than other matches. You know, when Liverpool goes to Stamford Bridge to play Chelsea, that's going to have more, stress and psychological, the need for psychological toughness than when, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, a Crystal Palace comes to play Liverpool, right? It's not much of a challenge for Liverpool, at least a perceived challenge. And so they're not going to be as stressed or psychologically stressed, I guess would be the best word, right? there won't be as much need for the psychological toughness, so to speak, in the game against Crystal Palace as it is against Chelsea, particularly if you're going to Chelsea's place and you have to play in that situation. And so even in the regular season tournaments, you're going to, I think, still face the physical toughness, the psychological toughness aspect of it. So it's not clear that the playoffs are really any worse off than the regular season in that context.
Right. I guess the defense would be, there are fewer such games, right?
Yeah.
In a long regular season, a certain number may hinge in some sense on psychological toughness, but not nearly as many. But I think, like you, I'm skeptical of this argument, though I could probably be convinced otherwise through empirical means, right? If there were really some studies that showed inexperienced teams don't perform as well in big games or something like that, maybe I would change my mind. But I'm not overly convinced that that's really a deciding factor very often.
Well, and especially since we are generally talking about professional or at least a top elite field. So most of the athletes we're talking about, this is not a new experience. So they're inexperienced at that level maybe, but they're still quite experienced. Most of them have been playing these games for, you know, the better part of a couple decades.
Right. Even a bad game, there are still 15,000 people in the stands.
Yeah.
So maybe this is more of an issue at lower levels in high school or something, right? You're for the first high school game at a big stadium with a big crowd.
Yeah.
Maybe it's more of a legitimate issue.
Yeah,
at the professional level.
You still see at least something like it. Now, maybe we're misreading it, but it does seem like, there are players that at least seem to shrink in the big light, so to speak, right? And now again, that may not really bear out, empirical study, but at least, just from anecdotally, I mean, now I don't think it's the case with a guy like Kershaw. I don't think that's really what's happening. But a lot of people will start to say, oh, well, look, he's lights out in the regular season, but then the postseason, he wasn't able to close the door. Right. And so is he not able to step it up? Is he cowering in some way? No, I don't think that's actually the case. I think it was just there's other factors there.
Right. Well, there's also the, did he pitch against the same level of competition, right? In a playoff, exactly. Presumably the competition is stepped up.
Right.
How much does just the fact that you're playing better teams actually play into those things, along with the obviously small sample size? It's pretty easy to develop narratives and talk about them for a long time.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's a bigger part of it. But I mean, you do have, I was just thinking of the Patriots Cincinnati football game this past Sunday night. And a lot of people were pointing that out about Cincinnati, that they seem, when it comes to playing in prime time against teams that they're supposed to be measuring themselves, they tend to falter in ways that are uncharacteristic in the way that they play normally. And so there does seem to be something there. I think we probably overplay it with these narrative discussions. But there is a little bit something there that I think sometimes is affected, and psychological toughness is a factor. Now, Dixon, asked this question in his piece, which the title of which is "On Winning in Athletic Superiority." Is that the name of his article?
So.
I will put up as part of the podcast posting at least the citations for the various articles that relate to this. Most of them are probably behind some kind of paywall if you don't have a subscription to the Journal of Philosophy of Sport. But if you have access to a library, you might be able to get them. But I'll put up the citations. But so anyway, Dixon in On Winning in Athletic Superiority asked the question. He says, why should we regard performance under pressure as so much more important in judging athletic excellence, when in other fields we regard pressure as a factor that can obscure excellence? And so that's a little bit of his claim about why we overemphasize psychological toughness. So I guess do you have any answers to that question? I kind of put you on the spot there a little bit, but are there reasons to think that maybe performance under pressure is something that we ought to be valuing as we are, or are we overvaluing it when in other fields we don't?
I'm not really coming up with a lot of examples where I think the psychological pressure of a playoff is really that much greater than anything in a regular season. If I thought there was really a difference, I would be more persuaded by that argument. I'm not sure how different a playoff game really is from a significant regular season game. Right. I guess on top of that, and maybe this is just more a question about what a contest or a competition is supposed to be about, but I would think that any serious athletic contest, you have to be, it has to matter a lot to you, right? You probably have to convince yourself it matters more than it really does, right? Obviously, yeah. In some sense, as is noted throughout the literature, the goals you're achieving in sport, right? Hitting a ball over a fence or through a hoop or crossing home plate, I mean, those are sort of meaningless goals.
Yeah.
We already have to pretend or sort of infuse them with more meaning than they have.
Right. The play aspect.
I think, whether you're playing at a professional level or you're playing, pickup basketball, I think there's already some sense that if you're not putting a lot of pressure on yourself, you're not really engaged in the activity in the right way.
Absolutely.
So while there might be differences in degree, I guess I'm not convinced that those differences in degree are as great as is commonly made out to be.
Yeah, and I think to some, it seems like Dixon, in a way, is trying to separate out psychological toughness from the measure of athletic excellence, that it's something distinct from athletic excellence, that there's athletic excellence over here, and then there's some measure of psychological toughness, some of which we need, but isn't really integral to athletic excellence. And I'm not sure that's true. I mean, it's something that I've only recently started to think about, you know, because of your paper. But it does strike me that, one, there are a lot of other fields where that psychological toughness is a part of it, where we don't regard performance under pressure as obscuring excellence, but as maybe highlighting it or as part of it, right? So you think of a doctor or a soldier or a firefighter or an actor, the performance under pressure seems to be integral to what they do. You know, it's one thing to be, you know, a great surgeon in the sense of being able to know all the right cuts in the anatomy and all that, but you better be able to do it when the patient's bleeding out in the operating room, right? Otherwise, that's not a surgeon I want. And similarly with, you know, an actor who's got to get up on stage so let's stick with a stage actor, get up on stage in front of an audience, you know, I don't know what a typical sort of Broadway theater might hold, but maybe 5,000 people, you know, and pretend to be someone else and make it believable that, I mean, I know that's got to be hard to do, and to be able to do that and to do it repeatedly, that ability to perform under that kind of pressure seems integral to what they're doing. And I think it's the same for the athlete. I think that athletic excellence is a measure, a test of not just a certain ability, but the sort of the whole package, the whole being, right? And that the stress and the response or reaction to the stress of the situation is a part of the test, right? That it's not, and that, as you said, that's there in a regular season game as much as it's going to be in the playoff. That shooting the ball into the hoop by yourself with nothing at stake is one thing, and that can be a fun activity. But doing it in a game with the defender on you, when you're in motion, with some pressure on you because maybe the game is at stake on the line in some way, that's another thing entirely. And I think that's an important part of what we're measuring and comparing in athletic excellence is your ability to do that in those kinds of situations, not just to do it on your own when nothing's at stake.
Right, I agree, and even if there are occasions where you know pressure gets in the way, I suspect the effects of it are not long lasting. Right, so for the actor, the first time he or she is on the stage, perhaps they're very nervous, but after that, they probably get accustomed to it pretty quickly. Right, maybe somebody's first playoff game is very nerve wracking.
Yeah,
but I'm hard pressed to think they're third playoff game is nearly nerve-wracking to the same degree in most cases.
To the same degree, but I mean, even just speaking personally from my own experience of teaching, which is certainly much lower stakes.
Right, I was thinking the same example.
You know, it's a worthwhile example too, because Dixon brings that up where he regards, you know, the job talk that you might give to get a job somewhere, and one is going to rightly be nervous in that situation, and that might affect their performance in their teaching. And so it's not a great evaluator of one's ability to teach well, but it's kind of what we have, and there's not much alternative you can do feasibly. But I think just day to day, though, there is something important about being able to sit in the classroom with students and be able to perform in a way your teaching responsibilities. And I know before every class, my heart flutters a little bit, you know? I mean, maybe some people aren't like that, but, you know, there's always those butterflies right before. And even, you know, I've been teaching for 15 years now almost. So it's still there in every class. Now, granted, it's not like it was the first time where, you know, I felt like I might black out. but it's, you know, it's still there a little bit. And it's still, there is something to the ability to control your emotional responses in that situation. And I think that's a part of the athletic excellence test is controlling your emotions, both the positive emotions, the negative emotions, your emotions of stress, your emotions of nerves, your emotions of your desires to accomplish these ends, to stay focused on what it is that you're trying to do in the moment. And that's all a part of it. And then if you're failing at that because the stage gets too big, then whatever talent you have, you need to bring it to bear in a different way, right?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that completely.
Cool. Because I mean, I think if Dixon is right that we are really overvaluing that and that that's not an important thing to be testing, then that would require us to really reevaluate a lot of what we think about in sport. But I think it's much more integral than he's giving you credit for, and that I think the psychological toughness thing, which is highlighted to some degree, I think it is highlighted more in a playoff system than it is in the regular season contest. Although I think you're right to definitely point out that it's there in the regular season as well, right? And so even that feature is going to be there whether it's playoffs or not. But it does seem that it's there a little bit more in the playoffs, just because you do have, particularly playoffs like the NFL, where you have one game elimination playoffs, right? It can all come down to one play, and so if you got to have the toughness to be able to, or the, I mean, you call it toughness or the resilience or the ability to kind of shut out the bigness of the moment and just focus on the now of what you're trying to do. Okay, I just need to get this 1 yard. You know, it's not, and just focus on that. I think that. There's something important about that, and I think that is part of the athletic excellence. And so I don't think we're fetishizing that to use Dixon's term. I think that we're actually properly paying attention to those stakes. And they're there, like you said, in the regular season. Let's see. So what would you say is the your ideal setup for deciding athletic excellence and supremacy, if you have an ideal?
Yeah, well, so we've already talked about how I think there are different kinds of excellences that are captured by different ways of organizing the championship system. So we've been talking about it as if there's just a playoff and just a season and contrasting these. And obviously within these, right, how long is the season? How should the season be set up? You know, those are obviously,
right,
you know, questions you have to go into, because a short season and a long season are themselves going to give you very different pictures of what matters in any particular sport.
In the balance of the schedule, do you have balanced schedules where everyone plays each other home and away, you know, and that's going to, if that's the fairest way to go, then that's going to put all kinds of logistic restrictions on the league. And if you're not doing that, how do you set it up so things are balanced in other ways?
Right.
So,
I mean, we could just compare, you know, two baseball systems, right? Major League Baseball, 162 games, puts a lot of value. You're going to have a lot of injuries. It puts a lot of value on having a deep bench and being able to call people up from AAA. Whereas, say, college baseball, you play 4 games a week. There's a lot more emphasis on having, you know, a couple of dominant starting pitchers, and you're probably good, right? So you're going to get very different team makeup just by how many games you're playing and how often you're playing.
Right.
So I'll contrast my view to what I think is the current view. If you look at society, we have what I call the hybrid system, right? You have a playoff and a season that are weirdly attached to each other, where we play a season for a really long time, and then, you know, the season champion, everybody says, all right, good job, you had the best record. Now let's go on to the playoff that really matters.
Yeah.
And I guess the idea behind the hybrid system is it's supposed to capture what's good about both of these, right? The regular season is not devalued as you worried, but it still gets some of these virtues of the things we like from playoffs and the drama, I suppose, that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's actually sort of a tempting idea that I think is ultimately just amounts to a contradiction, where now we're trying to do two different things, right? Now you have to build a team that wins over 162 games and is also a team that wins in a short playoff system. And while you could have both of these, it seems to me that ultimately you're doing different things when you're focusing on the long and the short term. And just because one team happens to do both of them doesn't actually mean that was a good system.
And it does seem like, now I don't know, I haven't actually looked at this, but my guess is, and my feel of it is that generally the team, whether it's baseball or hockey, the team that has the best record at the end of the season almost never, I don't want to say almost never, that's probably too strong, but typically they're not the ones who actually win the playoff championship.
Right. Well, if we just look at, you know, what happened last week, the Royals are built on a team that has no, or built a team with no power, and they don't do a lot of things offensively well. They're a pretty terrible offensive team, but they run really fast and play great defense.
Right.
So people have been saying for months, you know, this team may not be a playoff team, but if they were to get in the playoffs, you know, having a bullpen and having a bunch of really fast players can cause chaos in a short series. And you think, well, that's odd, right? Why do we have a team that may not make the playoffs, but is suddenly the most feared team if you get in the playoffs?
Yeah.
So I think it would be nice if we had a system that combined the merits of these various kinds of excellences, right? The consistency and the high peak. I think it actually makes more sense just to separate these and say, you know, sometimes we're going to have tournaments, and tournaments have their own virtues, and tournaments can be very short, or tournaments can be very drawn out, and then we'll have essentially longer tournaments, which you might think the regular season is, right, is more or less a longer tournament. So really, my suggestion is more stop treating these as if one championship matters more, and each kind of sport, why not have different kinds of championships, different kinds of systems where we acknowledge that you can be the best in different ways.
Yeah.
And that's not a problem. That's actually, it makes sense.
Yeah,
two teams excellent in different ways.
I really like that. I think it's very interesting. I'm not sure that something like that would ever really take root, at least in U.S. sports. But it does seem to be, at least in some ways, what goes on in international football or soccer football.
Right.
I never know what to call it. association football or EPL, right? So they have the Premier League, which is a season-long tournament. The champion is just team at the end with the most points. But then they have the Champions League, which is which is set up more like the World Cup in a way, where you have round. You have groups. They play round robin, and then you have a knockout tournament after that, and then elimination. You move into a more traditional kind of playoff setup. So when you ask people who watch a lot of European football, soccer, and you ask them, well, which do you prefer, the Premier League championship or winning the Champions League? Or, you know, I find you get a lot of different answers. And some people, you know, will, because I did a search on the web looking at reading different discussion forums, talking to some friends of mine who have been longtime fans, and I get different answers. Some will say, no, the Premier League is what you want a league, and Champions League is just extra. Others say, no, the Champions League, is more prestigious because you're playing against all these other European teams, and it's a broader base of talent, and it's a much better, it's just a grouping of talent that's better. Others say, you know, if you win the Champions League but you don't win the Premier League, that's not good. If you win the Premier League and you win the Champions League, then you're really, that's really the best. And so you get all kinds of answers, which I think fits more with your championship pluralism, in the sense that people are interested in sport and sporting excellence for different reasons and in different ways. And so having different opportunities and different ways to test these teams and players is going to, I think, appeal to people in ways that's much more broad and captures the varied ways in which excellence can exist.
I also like that international soccer has international teams, that it's not just the same team competing all the time, but in fact, sometimes we reorganize teams to see how players play in different systems with different teammates, that kind of thing. And that most of these international teams, they've been playing together for a long time.
Yeah.
So it's not just, let's throw a bunch of people together like an all-star game, which is always a mess.
Right.
But in fact, it's people who have come from, they've been playing together for so long, or they've been playing the same style, that you can see how do these styles work in different formats, right? You might find there's one player who was great in the international scene, but doesn't play nearly as well for their other team, just based on the team's style of play or something like that. And I think we should embrace the fact that different combinations tell us different things, rather than, again, thinking, well, you know, this professional version has to be better for whatever arbitrary reason we think that is.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. You see that much more in international soccer, a little bit maybe in basketball. But I still think from the American point of view, is those are secondary to the professional leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't seem like something that's going to change anytime soon. But it's interesting to think about and fun to talk about. And I mean, one aspect of the European setup is the relegation and promotion, which I think is really interesting. But that's sort of different, although it connects into to the development of the regular season. But that's pretty much all the time we have for this. Thanks for coming on and talking about this really interesting issue.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
This has been the Sports Ethics Podcast. You can find us at sportsethicist.com, Facebook, and Twitter, and you can email the show at sportsethicist@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.